There are now less than 3 months until the state budget is due in Albany, and with the governor expected to unveil his own taxing and spending plan later this month, we wanted to check in with State Senator Liz Krueger, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the chamber's Finance Committee, which makes her the point person for the Senate on the state budget. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thank you very much, Dave.
So as we speak on Tuesday morning, what's your understanding of the size of our current budget deficit? Do we still have a big hole to close before the end of the fiscal year on March 31st, or did the December stimulus from Washington, D.C. make all our problems disappear?
It didn't make all our problems disappear, and it's not just because of the stimulus. And I'm working off the controller's numbers because I have the most confidence in his tracking of the numbers. And he says we are now down to about a $4 billion deficit for the remainder of this year. Now, that's a lot of money for 3 months, by the way.
Yeah.
And so it does factor in some increased revenues from Washington. It factors in some increased tax revenues beyond what we thought might be happening. And, of course, the governor has been withholding some spending all year and I think writing off a number of dollars and cents as we go along in his own way. And so, you know, $4 billion is scary, but not as scary, you know, as $8 billion. Now, it's a different topic for walking into next year. We still don't know how large a deficit we're walking into April 1st, and I think most of us assume it's going to be a pretty big base number. But then again, we are more optimistic about tax revenues going up and Washington not, you know, simply declaring to New York State and other states, go drop dead, don't bother us anymore.
I want to touch on something you mentioned there with regards to the state comptroller and using his office's analysis. Does that mean you're rejecting sort of the projections from Governor Andrew Cuomo and his budget division? And if so, why is that?
Well, sometimes different people say different things, and it gets a little confusing. And with the controller's office, you can actually see documents with numbers on them, which is quite helpful. And the Division of Budget isn't as excited about transparency.
Sorry, I find that amusing, because it's very accurate.
Yes, it is accurate.
So right now, where is the Senate Democratic Conference in its budget process? Obviously, a lot of what the Senate does will be in response to the governor's initial budget proposal later this month. But what's happening behind the scenes right now for you and your team?
So, of course, it is true that the governor holds most of the cards in any budget process. But we are a young, energetic conference, and we are a member-driven conference. So I have members submitting bills on a regular basis at this point that would propose alternative revenue sources for the state. Obviously, there's all kinds of bills now being introduced, you know, for statutes and laws, et cetera. But there's a real interest in alternative sources of revenue that are being written up in bill format and submitted. And what I then do is have the finance staff who, you know, report to me in the context of my being the finance chair and have them taking a serious look at every single bill proposed by one of my colleagues. We vet those bills for the dollars and cents we project could be raised. We vet those bills for the constitutional basis. We vet those bills for have these revenue models ever been used anywhere else and what happened. We vet these bills for whether we think that they could avoid litigation in the courts for years, because a source of revenue that doesn't actually collect any money isn't particularly useful to us. So my job is to help evaluate these bills, but not actually make a judgment on them now. And my conference will, working together, sort through, I think, its priorities and where it thinks we ought to go over the coming months.
So does that mean, with regards to making a judgment, I can't get you to weigh in on which of these approaches makes the most sense to you at this point?
No, I don't speak for the Senate Democrats.
No, I just mean for you, for Liz Krueger.
Oh, for me, for Liz Krueger, I am a big supporter of progressive taxation, where those who can pay more relative to what they have. I'm a big believer of even playing fields, and I don't believe our tax system at this point does have even playing fields. We know that there are a couple of models of taxation that are tried and true, which are, you know, increases in personal income tax that have been adjusted many times in our history, sometimes going up temporarily, sometimes going down. I believe that corporate finance taxes can also be made more progressive rather than a straight across the board amount. Obviously, huge numbers of companies are doing dreadfully during this time and even going out of business. But there are significant size companies that are doing extraordinarily well. And I, Liz Krueger, am not sure why we have the same percent tax base for a company doing extraordinarily well as a small company that's dying on the vine. So I think that, you know, exploring building progressivity into existing taxes makes a lot of sense. I think that understanding how the economy is changing such that we can tax activity that should be taxed, we had just never dealt with it or figured it out up till now, are important things to tax. Because again, even playing field. You and I should not pay a different tax rate because you have a brick building and hire workers on my local town street, and I am somehow in a cloud and then delivering the product via truck. There shouldn't be a basis where how I earn my money in my cloud isn't taxed, and how you make your money having a store on Main Street is taxed.
We're discussing the state budget with State Senator Liz Krueger, a Manhattan Democrat who is chair of the Senate's Finance Committee. How much ambiguity should the legislature be willing to accept in the final state budget? For instance, can state lawmakers approve a spending plan that bets on future federal relief, even if it hasn't actually been approved by April 1st?
I'm thinking.
We'll allow it.
Okay. I have a strange answer.
Let's hear it.
Whether or not we can do it, that sometimes doesn't stop us from acting here in Albany. So in fairness, last year, as we were trying to put the budget to bed effective April 1st, and we were watching the tsunami that we didn't even understand yet that turns out to be called COVID-19 coming at us, We were pretty sure something terrible was happening that would impact our budget, either the need for more money to spend on things we didn't even understand yet, and that came true, or the reduction in tax revenue because our economy collapsed in correlation, and that sort of came true. So we had both of those things happening, but we didn't really understand exactly that they could or would happen, just likely. So we did try to build in worst-case contingency plans into the budget. And you know, we're still taking stock of whether we made the right or wrong decision at that time, whether we handed off too much power through executive orders to the governor at that time. We're still extremely confused about how much money he did borrow and how did he use it and how does that add up against the monies we did get from Washington. So, walking into this year's budget, yes, I think it's probably likely that we have hopes and dreams about increased revenues from Washington, D.C., that we won't have facts about April 1st. And we're going to need to try to figure out how we plan for that in our budget. But I think that there is flexibility for contingency. For example, if we think we're getting X amount from the federal government and it still leaves us a hole and we need to increase taxing people, then we may have to do that. If it's possible that after April 1st, the federal government comes through with more money than we knew about, I don't believe there's anything that stops us from revisiting the action we took on revenue before April 1st and saying, maybe we don't need it all now. So the exact legal language you're supposed to use to make sure it's all kosher, talk to a lawyer, not me, but imagining a scenario where we can make adjustments, yes. And you know what? You want government to be able to make adjustments when the story changes. You need government to be able to make changes when the story changes.
In terms of those revenue raisers, do you think those, if they are addressed, will be done or should be done in the context of the state budget, or could they be done as a package of standalone bills, say, in January or February?
I don't think it's realistic that you make significant revenue changers outside of the budget. And technically, if you did them outside the budget, the governor doesn't have to use them because they're not a part of the budget. So I don't actually think it would be that practical to go through an exercise of passing freestanding tax bills when it doesn't mean the governor would even choose to accept them as the revenue for the budget. I actually do think revenue primarily needs to be in the context of budget bills.
And after a quick break, we'll talk about marijuana legalization with Senator Liz Krueger, who is co-author of legislation that would create a legalized and regulated marijuana market in New York.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our conversation with State Senator Liz Krueger, a Manhattan Democrat who is the Senate sponsor of legislation that would legalize adult-use marijuana. So for the last 2 years, Governor Cuomo and state lawmakers have been unable to come to a deal on legalizing recreational marijuana in New York. What are the outstanding sticking points right now, and is the separation still largely due to how to invest potential state revenues?
I actually don't know, because I've been delighted to hear the governor say he wants to get marijuana done this year. He hasn't put out his own written proposal, and we haven't had any three-way conversations, meaning the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor, to compare notes yet. So I know that Crystal Peoples-Stokes from the Assembly and I have submitted a bill, the same one we had amended later last year, which factored in a bunch of changes we believe that we had come to agreement on three-way. We look forward to discussing this with the governor. I look forward to, if he puts his proposal out in writing, holding his proposal up and my proposal up next to each other, and then I can sincerely answer the question. Here's where we agree, here's where we don't. Yes, in the past, a disagreement seemed to come from commitments of revenue to certain priorities. The governor did not wish any outline of what the money needed to be used for to be built into the statute. Crystal and I feel very strongly that revenue from legalized adult-use marijuana need to be put back into the communities where the greatest harm was done, which are primarily black and brown communities. We feel very strongly that money must be invested in supporting new business opportunities and entrepreneurship in these communities. We feel very strongly we must finish the job of decriminalizing and expunging records of people who ended up with criminal records for private use and low-use marijuana crimes. We feel very strongly that a significant portion of this revenue needs to be invested in drug treatment and education against using drugs for the far more dangerous and addictive drugs that are, even during this pandemic, quietly skyrocketing addiction and overdose rates in the state.
When it comes to those three-way negotiations between the Assembly, Senate, and the governor's office, have there been any talks since legalization fell out of the budget 9 months ago?
There have been no official talk in a three-way model. I can't speak for Crystal about her conversations. Certainly there's been informal conversations with various, you know, people who work for the administration. But no, there's a process where the governor says we want to sit down and talk about this, and that has not happened three-way since 9 months ago.
In June of 2019, Joe Spector and John Campbell at the USA Today Network tallied up all of your Democratic colleagues and where they stood on the issue of marijuana legalization, and they came up with a whip count of 30 Senate Democrats, just too shy of what you would need to pass something in the chamber. Since then, your conference has picked up a few members that support legalization, and I'm curious what you think that means for the dynamic of passage heading into, well, I guess now in 2021.
So we have not conferenced marijuana yet in our 3 days in session. But yes, I'm feeling very optimistic that I could get at least 32 votes for this bill. I think that when you look at the issue of marijuana, you see a number of patterns. One, as more and more states are doing exactly what we propose here, there's more and more public education and opinion about, oh, not such a terrible idea. It's working in other places. Two, as it's happening in other states, you continue to hear the drumbeat of, well, everybody can just cross a border and go get the stuff. So really all we're doing is losing revenue by not having it legally available here. Why is that such a good idea? Three, the demographics of the age of legislators significantly impacts their attitude. And so we are trending younger. I feel it as I am here. I am definitely older in comparison to many of my new colleagues coming in. And they tend, not universally, but they tend to be more supportive of decriminalizing and taxing and regulating marijuana. So I think all the trending is positive towards supporting this legislation. So without having a head count today, I feel in my gut that the head count would be ahead of where we were last time somebody counted.
And I have to imagine having that additional support makes you, well, puts you in a stronger position for any negotiations with the governor's office, or if you were to consider this as a standalone bill, since you have to make sort of, I guess, less accommodations for people who might be, say, on the fence about the issue and can pass maybe a cleaner bill and don't have to make as many accommodations.
It is true that because it is not a budget bill per se, we could attempt to pass it through the two houses and submit it to the governor. I suspect that would still translate into further negotiations. I'm big on negotiations. That's fine. That's what legislators are supposed to do. Often when the two houses go down that road, you then go into chapter amendment negotiations to make changes after the first version of the bill has passed. And I'm prepared to go down that road. And I'm prepared to go down a road where we give it a try ourselves. And the governor perhaps can't be brought along enough immediately. And then perhaps he tries to introduce it into the budget. And we negotiate it in the context of the budget. So the interesting thing about marijuana is, because of the tax ramifications and the expenditure ramifications for creating a whole new agency to handle cannabis, it works as a freestanding bill, but it also works as a section of a budget bill. So we have lots of opportunities to get it done this year, and I think that's very good for the issue.
Do you have any initial thoughts on the governor's cannabis czar, Norman Birenbaum? I mean, have you had any engagement with him? Any thoughts on his role in all this?
No, I certainly don't know the gentleman well enough to have an opinion. I'm glad that the governor hired someone and gave him that title, because it implies that the governor expects that person to have a job in his administration. So far, you know, Norman doesn't quite have that job yet.
Even though
we don't have a program.
Although he is sort of involved in some of the hemp regulations that have been...
I know, I'm sort of teasing. That's unfair. Because actually, we already have a hemp CBD set of regulations that I actually think we need to expand on. We have a medical marijuana program, which also within my bill we expand on. And it is far better that the governor have people around him who know the issues and are there to assist him and educate him as we go along.
Speaking of hemp regulations, draft state regulations for the hemp industry in New York, which is potentially waiting to explode, didn't include a framework for selling a smokable product, like a, you know, potentially, I guess, a CBD joint or just loose flower, which is kind of seen as a big missed opportunity for farmers and the market. What do you think of this tack by the Cuomo administration? And, you know, your bill addresses sort of the broad landscape. So would you potentially want to see a smokable hemp product available for sale in New York?
I'm not big on smoking the product. I mean, it's not just me personally. When I talk with doctors who seem to be open completely to cannabis products being used, but I ask them what they're concerned about, they say smoking it, whether it's hemp or cannabis, whether it's medical version or recreational. Basically, their position, many doctors' positions, are that human lungs were not designed to inhale burning product, whatever that product is. And so it is irritating to the lungs. It can escalate other underlying illnesses of the lungs, and is really least best practice if one wants to imbibe the drug and other parts of cannabis and hemp that you may find medicinal in value. So I'm always nervous about, you know, Liz Krueger thinks you shouldn't smoke the stuff, so she's going to write that into the bill, because also that this bill has been the creation of many, many, many different people's input. But you know, if you just ask me, and you just ask me, I'm not so big on anybody smoking any version of it. I think that there are other ways to imbibe the product that do not involve putting burning substances into your lungs.
Well, we've been speaking with the ageless state senator Liz Krueger, a Manhattan Democrat who chairs the chamber's finance committee and is the author of Marijuana Legalization Legislation in the Capitol. Senator, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.